Good morning.
Good morning.
Today is Monday, August 16th, 2010. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in Hood River, and 100.7 in Corvallis and Albany. And on the web, it's kboo.fm.
We thank you for joining us this morning. We have a program in which we will continue our ongoing discussion about the incidents recently around WikiLeaks. We will have a discussion with two guests who are very well informed about these issues, and we hope to broaden our conversation to look at not only the specific of the events, but also broader philosophical questions. Joining us this morning are Ray McGovern, who many of you know, was a CIA analyst for 27 years, and also Colleen Rowley, who was an FBI whistleblower who was named one of Time Magazine's People of the Year in 2002. They will join us to discuss some of the issues raised by the recent WikiLeaks releases, and we ask you to join us in this discussion. Among the questions we will focus on is, how do we as a society address the need for accurate and timely information? And do we adapt our high-tech methods to acquire authentic stories, or do we rely on government sources?
And with that, we'll go to our guests. We'll bring up first, we got them both. Okay, good. We got the high sign. Good morning, Ray McGovern. Good morning, Colleen Rowley. How are you doing today?
Great.
Great. Okay, great. Well, thanks for having a time in your day for both of us and for our listeners this morning. And I guess we'll start first with just your take when you first heard about the entire incident of the WikiLeaks. When you first heard that this information had been released, the first installment of it, what was your reaction to this? And separate from the fact that, Colleen, I know your article says, well, that sounded like an echo of Pentagon, but what was your reaction?
I actually knew about WikiLeaks before the collateral murder video, which actually was kind of this breakthrough on the war issues. But WikiLeaks had been already putting out things for, I think, a couple of years, including even the Republican National Convention, which was held in St. Paul for some, I don't know how they got a hold of it, but they got a hold of a Department of Homeland Security chart that actually included many peace groups in preparation for the Republican National Convention. And WikiLeaks had posted that, and of course it was jaw-dropping to many of the people who had marched and stuff here in St. Paul that they were actually on this chart. So... Of course, when WikiLeaks did post the collateral murder video showing the Apache helicopter shooting, that was very much on a par with the truth that came out in the Pentagon Papers.
And Ray?
Well, like Colleen, I had been familiar with WikiLeaks and well before the incident that was exposed by the gun barrel photography. Where you saw young troops involved in a turkey shoot of Iraqi civilians in Baghdad in July of 2007. Before that, WikiLeaks had put out really interesting stuff, including a Pentagon memorandum as to how to stop WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? Well, CIA guidance as to how to make the French and the Germans feel better about Afghanistan, about our chances of winning there, you know, sort of a covert action propaganda supplying effort to make sure that the press in West Germany and France had the chance to have the, quote, right answers on these things. So WikiLeaks has been around for, as Colleen said, about 3 years, and the contribution that it had already made was quite substantial at the time when they released the collateral murder episode. And I would just suggest to your listeners that if any of them have not seen that, all they need do is put on their URL line the words collateral murder, and they will have access to two tapes, really. One is 17 minutes abbreviated, one is 39 minutes. You really have to see that. And to my chagrin, many of the people that I talk to in relatively progressive audiences have not seen it, have not realized how easy it is to download it. And those that know about it, you know, have not taken the trouble. So you need to do that and tell all your friends, just download that, and you can see, not so much, well, you can see how our young soldiers in that Apache helicopter have brutalized the 12 Iraqi civilians who were killed. But you can also, if you step back and think about it, see how our soldiers have been brutalized themselves by being ordered, you know, being ordered to brutalize others. And the last thing I'll say on this is that when the authorities were asked about this, they confirmed that these soldiers were only, well, in the old German tradition, they would say, I was only following orders, right?
Yes.
Well, they were only following what we call the rules of engagement approved by the Pentagon. And sure enough, the Secretary of Defense himself, Robert Gates, defended the indefensible. So what people need to do is acquaint themselves with collateral murder.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. Our guests today are Ray McGovern, who was a CIA analyst for 27 years, and Colleen Rowley, who was an FBI whistleblower. Our focus this morning is on WikiLeaks and the issues surrounding some recent events. And specifically, we are glad to have these two individuals here because they can give us some insight about their own encounter with sharing information, and more specifically about the role of the media in terms of sharing and making sure that the public has access to information. Both of these individuals have had illustrious careers, but both have also challenged the status quo. And specifically this morning, we are glad that they are here to give us some insight on their interpretation of the role of the media. Mr. McGovern, I think you have, if not coined the phrase, have also popularized a phrase in terms of the media, FCM, the fawning corporate media. What do you mean by that phrase? And I want to expand on that as we talk about their response to some of the issues we're raising this morning.
Well, first let me say before I forget that FCM is actually an acronym, and I'll leave that thought with your audience. This springs from an experience that traces back for me 47 years. That's how long I've been in this town of Washington. And I've seen a lot of change, and some sea change, but no sea change more significant than this, and that is that we no longer have, in any real sense, a free media. That is big. It couldn't be bigger. The Fourth Estate is defunct. That's the bad news. The good news is that there's a Fifth Estate. It exists in the ether. It's used by people like ConsortiumNews.com and WikiLeaks. It's not able to be controlled by government, corporation, or advertisers. That's the good news. And it really is a new world out there. So what I see as the main task here is to close the open link between the availability of things like WikiLeaks and people who could interpret it honestly, to close that end of the link with Americans who don't necessarily hear even about the existence of this possibility of learning the truth. Somehow or other, the people that I talk to in these audiences that haven't even heard about WikiLeaks, they need some way to learn that, hey, good news, this stuff is available, and it's so easy. Almost everybody has a computer, so let's have at it.
In terms of the Fourth Estate being dead, and you're saying no free media exists anymore, I'd like to get you to elaborate on that, because I'm thinking, well, we have some independent radio stations, we have some cable access television facilities, we have some community or community-based newspapers. Would you exempt them from free media, or are you specifically talking about the larger corporate media and basically leveling the charge at them? It's not being news anymore.
Yeah, it's the fawning corporate media, and you're quite right in pointing out that there are wonderful people out there slogging away trying to get some truth spread around, is what we try to do. Colleen and I, by the way, are members of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and we put out corporate product every now and then. We just did our 20th. And let me just give you a real-life example. 10 days ago, we put out a memorandum to the president, written just as we used to when we were on active duty, so to speak. The memorandum was about the possibility, even the probability, that the Israeli leaders will decide to start a war with Iran, despite private admonitions by the president, please, please, please don't do that. We told the president, unless he stood up in public and said, you may not do that, and if you do, we're not going to bail you out, we're not going to pull your chestnuts out of the fire. Now, there were seven of us that signed that, a part of the steering group of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and I did up the arithmetic. I can do that still, okay? Guess how many years of service in intelligence and security that we all had. The average was 26 and a half years, okay? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of expertise. Now, what happened? Well, we got on Russian TV. We got on press TV out of Iran. We got on Al Jazeera. We got on Australian radio. Guess how many fawning corporate media channels or radio programs we got on?
Probably none.
I was going to say none, but then I realized I was on a Fox radio.
I said none.
in Wilmington, Delaware. So
yeah,
that's the name of the game. It's not like we're starting from scratch, and it's not like we have been wrong in the past. We issued a memorandum on the day of Colin Powell's speech before the UN, and we said in as polite a way as we could, Mr. President, this is a crock, and nobody listened.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. This is your opportunity to speak with either former CIA analyst Ray McGovern or FBI. I hesitate to call you just a whistleblower, but I say former FBI member Colleen Rowley, as we speak about the idea of the responsibility of the opportunity of the internet to promote responsible journalism, true journalism, or whether or not we close our ears and eyes and not hear the truth. Join us with the conversation 503-231-8187. Good morning, John.
Yeah, thanks for having these guests on the air. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Very good. It's a complex thing that's going on, and as you both know from your experience, there's so much smoke and mirrors out there. And, as you probably also know, regardless of what we've heard, the intelligence agencies could probably shut these people down at the drop of a hat. And
shut which people down?
The WikiLeaks servers. The WikiLeaks servers could probably be unplugged in seconds if they really wanted. Also, this stuff has gotten into the New York Times and the Observer. We know their history. We know their the collusion there. And so the question is this, and you've probably heard this analysis already, that what do you think of the possibility that there is a further agenda at play, a deeper agenda at play, and that these things that are coming out are actually orchestrated for the purpose of perhaps expanding the war into Pakistan, in particular because the most damning, perhaps the most damning evidence coming out is the ISI collusion and abetment of the so-called Taliban.
Caller,
what do you think about that?
Caller, before you, we have our guest answer the question, can you expand on ISI for listeners who may not know who that is?
Yeah, it's the Pakistani Intelligence Service.
Okay, great. Well, Colleen, would you answer that for us first?
Sure. I personally, and I've read a lot about WikiLeaks and followed it and watched these press conferences, and to the extent that my intelligence background, and which included informants and all these kinds of things, I don't see any evidence that WikiLeaks itself is some kind of tool of the American government. Really just exactly the opposite. I do agree with the caller. I think the WikiLeaks is giving serious heartburn to the Pentagon. If you watched the Pentagon spokesperson, Jeff Morrell, who basically freaked out and even said he got so garbled in his press conference trying to say that we need to stop WikiLeaks, that he even said something about the war. He says that we're not making progress in the war in Afghanistan, and then he had to correct himself. He got so, so alarmed by what he's trying to say. So I don't see any evidence that WikiLeaks is being operated as some kind of CIA ploy or anything like that. But I do agree with the caller that our United States intelligence and NSA has a lot of technology available to it as well. And the claim made by WikiLeaks that they can freely publish things because they're operating internationally, because our government also can put pressure on these countries like Australia and Sweden and other countries, certainly France and Germany. So I'm not quite sure. I honestly think that WikiLeaks is trying to be careful. I think it behooves them to be seen as a part of the media. And I know we kind of talked about this a little bit before, but the mainstream media or the fawning corporate media is a bit jealous of the fact that
yes.
WikiLeaks has this independence that they don't have. And so when WikiLeaks does go to the press, tries to hold a press conference in the press room, it's greeted by the corporate media with a mixed feelings. In one way, I think they're jealous, and they actually, some of the better reporters, kind of long for the old days when
yes.
they were. But then others see this as a threat to their easy way of basically publishing Pentagon press releases. You know, that's the easy, if a reporter gets into the habit of just transcribing what the Pentagon is putting out or going embedded and basically writing the Pentagon stories, they see WikiLeaks as a bit of a threat to that easy job that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's still, to me, I'm still a little confused. I mean, I wouldn't expect the New York Times and the Observer to reprint this stuff simply because we know their history and we know how much control there is there. And
let me jump in here, if I may.
Yes, please.
I think that first of all. As so often happens, I find it very difficult to disagree with Colleen. When we're talking about the people who were given these documents, it wasn't the Observer, it was the Guardian.
The Guardian, excuse me, yeah, you're right.
There's a difference there, and it was Der Spiegel. And the New York Times, to its credit, did a pretty thorough analysis of those documents, not dissimilar from what it did with the Pentagon Papers. And the stories that came out after the 3 weeks that they had to analyze these things were incredibly damning of the U.S. policy, and I just can't conceive of any net worth or net benefit that would accrue to the government by aiding and abetting this. The other things I'd simply say is that Pakistan, that's a big story to the degree that the Times led with that story after in the first day they could publish was very telling because it gives me some hope that the Times is able to see the real significance of this. And for those of your listeners who haven't had a chance to look at this, the story is simply this. We are giving Pakistan $1 billion a year. They, in turn, are giving some of that to their security services, their intelligence services, that are training, equipping, and in some cases leading, guess who? The Taliban. All the people that are killing our young soldiers out there in Afghanistan. That's pretty scandalous. And there it is, in granularity, in ground truth, literally, in official U.S. Army documents. So that's one of the big stories. The other part here is Pakistan. You know, most people don't realize that the significance of Pakistan dwarfs pretty much everything else in that area. There are more people in Pakistan, actually 30 million more people in Pakistan than in Afghanistan, Iran, and Iraq, all put together. Not only that, but Pakistan, of course, already has nuclear weapons. So to the degree that our policy in Afghanistan is being opposed by the Pakistani intelligence service and is causing us all kinds of enemies among the populace as we shoot away with our drones, that's really counterproductive in the extreme because we're missing the boat here. We're endangering our relations with a very populous country of 170 million with nuclear weapons. We really need to get some adult supervision on the policymakers in the White House.
Well, thank you so much for the call, John. Unfortunately, we had to let you go because we've only got one line here, so we've got both guests online. So we do want to encourage people to call in 503-231-8187.
Let me remind you that we're speaking this morning with Colleen Rowley, who was an FBI whistleblower, and also Ray McGovern, who was a CIA analyst for 27 years. And we're speaking about the implications of what it means to live in a world where WikiLeaks is a source of information. I was wondering if we could do a little bit of reflection about the media today and the media a few decades past. I would imagine that many younger reporters in the corporate media, senior editors or people who came of age during, say, maybe the Pentagon Papers days, maybe, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And I'm wondering in terms of the shift of the media in the past few decades, what advice can you give to younger reporters who might have an interest in reporting news that is unfettered by the larger media? How might they be able to honestly do their job?
I can jump in there because I had wanted to say something before. The old days of not only the Pentagon Papers, but Watergate, you saw these very, of course, courageous reporters, even back then, Woodward and Bernstein, who talked to Deep Throat, FBI official Mark Felt, like he was high level, second or third in the FBI, kept his identity secret for like four decades. And again, that brought down their expose of Watergate, brought down the Nixon presidency. You saw the New York Times and I think 18 other papers talking and taking the Pentagon Papers from Daniel Ellsberg and courageously fighting against Department of Justice court orders to stop publishing. And the sea change that has occurred in those four decades plus is just amazing. If you are now a government whistleblower, as I was, as I know hundreds of other, I can go down a list and just name names of government whistleblowers now who tried to reveal the illegalities of the warrantless monitoring under the Bush administration, who tried to speak out against the contract with Halliburton, the corrupt contracting with Halliburton right before the war. So I know all of these whistleblowers. they can't even get a mainstream fawning corporate media reporter to even listen to them. They can't even get to square one. I know a former federal air marshal who warned about his bosses taking air marshals off of flights that were under threat alerts. I mean, it's just completely counterintuitive to believe that you wouldn't have media. And I will say this federal air marshal did get some media. He got on Fox News a little bit simply because he was warning about a public safety risk like this. But he didn't get nearly, he did not get, you know, New York Times front page exposure. And to this day, he remains fired and unable to even get a job because he spoke out about these things. So the sea change is just amazing. And I think readers or listeners might want to know one more thing, which is that the media now, the mainstream media, which, of course, is collecting money from, you know, advertisers, and Rupert Murdoch is kind of bleeding down and the Fox News thing, where, but that media does use a lot of leaking. If you read stories, the recent one yesterday in the New York Times about, it was called The Shadow. It's about the war in Yemen and these bombings and stuff in Yemen that have turned out badly. They've gotten the wrong people. But it was a front-page story in the New York Times, and to its credit, it was a good story. But it's just filled with secret anonymous sources that are giving this information to the New York Times. In other words, they're leaking classified information. Mm-hmm. But those leaks are not coming from private first class level people in the first hand. They're coming from the top levels of the Pentagon that are done in order to shape public opinion. And I think that's the problem. We don't have people in the reporters that are courageous enough, and actually it's not just courage, they have to work hard to get the stories that would come from firsthand information at the bottom. They would have to protect sources that, you know, let's say whistleblowers in government, like a Mark Felt who can't speak out openly, and they're not willing to do that. And again, it now falls to independent internet sources, which have a hard time breaking through and actually reaching this JQ public. I'm sorry to go on so long, but JQ public, there's another problem, is that the mainstream media, like the Washington Post, for instance, when it does do something really good, it assigns Pulitzer Prize-winning Dana Priest for 2 years to research the story of Top Secret America. They find out that 854,000 people now have top secret clearances, and the massive increase in secrecy has led to them stepping on each other's toes and whatever. She had a great expose about a month ago. Now the media has done such a poor job that they no longer even have people reading their exposés. Mm. They've kowtowed to this infotainment and distracting people with things like Lindsay Lohan so much that they can't even, when they do come out with something like the Pentagon Papers, this Top Secret America story was great. When I speak to people, I can't even find anyone who read it because they're so used to just having these very simple stories in the mainstream media.
Part of the thing that I wanted to ask both of you is, and this is in the same spirit of the question that Cecil asked, do you think that part of the issue is that they're just not training our journalists to actually
I'm not hearing.
Can you repeat the question?
Whether or not we're training our journalists to be inquisitive.
We're not training, exactly. And there's no premium in that because journalists have been fired for actually going against the grain. They if they write a hard-hitting story, even in cases where they sometimes win Pulitzers for the hard-hitting story, there's no monetary remuneration for that. And they often find out that they get more rewarded by their bosses for writing transcribing the Pentagon's press releases.
Mm-hmm. So how then do we find our way out of this wilderness in terms of getting accurate information? Certainly, we've talked this morning about independent sources, the internet, looking at international press. But are there more things that, one, that those who are training to be journalists can do or to challenge their corporate owners? And are there things in which the person who reads or listens to the media can do to get accurate information?
Well, absolutely. The readers and listeners are the customers here. And if they quit their subscriptions to a newspaper and they do it in mass, it makes a difference. The paper has to react. Here locally in the Twin Cities, our main Minneapolis Star Tribune, which was a wonderful paper, it was owned by a family, it had hard-hitting opinions and editorials against torture and against the unjustified wars. All of a sudden, it was taken over by a corporation. It was bought out about 3-4 years ago, and the paper changed dramatically. All of their reporters left. They hired new people, and what happened was their subscriptions went down over time. People said, why am I reading this? It's not telling me anything. And ultimately, they've had to maybe adjust a little bit because we've noticed a bit of a difference in the paper because they've actually lost their readership.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 here in the city. This is More Talk Radio with Celeste, me, and my co-host Cecil. We're speaking with former CIA analyst Ray McGovern and former FBI whistleblower Colleen Riley. And we're speaking about not only the efficiency or efficacy of internet-based or independent-based media, but the responsibility of the media as a whole to make sure we get the information that's useful. I wanted to go back to something before when we were talking about the difference between getting ground-level leaks as opposed to the high-level leaks, and that most of these high-level leaks that we're experiencing nowadays are more of a propaganda nature. Is that something that is that the general course of the way information is leaking out of the military or some of these closed groups or establishments, that the higher-ups are not really becoming bold enough to be whistleblowers, that we're only going to see that kind of honest activity from those who are lower in rank or lower in hierarchy?
Well, I think it's a combination. This is Ray. What's missing across the board is something that may sound quaint or obsolete. It's integrity.
Yeah, that and idealism, I think so.
Yeah, people who want to know the truth and make the truth available to others. Now, in describing Colleen Rowley, a whistleblower just doesn't do it. We call her a patriotic truth teller, and yes, it's necessary to realize that not only was she a special agent for the FBI, but she was division counsel. She's an attorney, and what she did was took lots of guts. She wrote two memoranda to the director of the FBI, both of which got published, and one warned about what precisely would happen if the director of the FBI let the president pretend that there was evidence that Iraq had something to do with 9/11, that Iraq had something to do with al-Qaeda, okay? And then before the war, she warned that, all manner of calamity is going to happen if you let these things go through. So that's the experience out of which she'd been there and done that in a way that I have not. One of the things that is useful to remember is who owns these phony corporate media. If you look at the channels and you look at the outlets, they're owned by corporations that are profiteering. I don't say profiting.
Yes.
I say profiteering on this war. And that is really amazing. And so, if you look at it in a more subtle way, what did we see yesterday? Well, yesterday we saw the beginning of a major media campaign launched by the anointed David Petraeus out there in Kabul, talking to NBC, talking to the Washington Post. And what is he saying? Oh, well, here's the Washington Post explaining what's going on. The general said there are, quote, incipient signs of progress in parts of the south of Afghanistan, and there are nascent steps to reintegrate low-level insurgents. Now, Petraeus went to Princeton, so he might think that the rest of us don't know what incipient and nascent really mean after 9 full years of war.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all we're seeing, incipient and nascent steps, well, my goodness, he ought to hang it up and realize and admit, because he's smart enough to know that this is a fool's errand. Now, what happens to these interviews? Well, I guess what the lead story in the New York Times today is. Petraeus is going to hang in there. What's the Washington Post say as a basis of their... Here's the Post, I quote. The general has been, quote, burying into operations here in Afghanistan and traveling to the far reaches of this country, and has concluded that the U.S. strategy to win the nearly 9-year-old war is, quote, fundamentally sound, end quote, period, end quote. Fundamentally sound. That's rubbish. Yeah, I really regret the fact that Petraeus is too young to have served in Vietnam. Because there's some stuff you can't get out of Army manuals. There's some stuff you can't get out of instruction at Fort Leavenworth. A lot of my friends are dead because they read the manuals back in the early 60s, and they got to Vietnam, and in the jungles and in the mountains, the manuals didn't apply, okay? Nor do they apply in the incredibly mountainous part of Afghanistan. So if I'm sounding a little angry, I am. Petraeus knows better. Petraeus has political ambitions. That is very clear for many things. Why does he go to New Hampshire, for example, okay? I would remember where you hear it first. I think he'll be the Republican candidate for president back in 2012. He's got Obama in a tough place. Obama has given Petraeus the latitude to play him, and Petraeus is doing that. Yesterday's interview indicated that Petraeus will no doubt oppose the president if he makes any real move toward removing substantial troops a year from now. He'll oppose that. And if it happens, he's got Obama, because the ball will be lost and he'll blame it on Obama. And if he gets more troops, well, he'll prosper until he comes back, civilianizes, and runs for president.
Unless we get another WikiLeaks.
Well, no, that's it. We will get more WikiLeaks, and that's the good news.
Well, that's the good news, and that's what might stop him in his tracks. But we do have another caller online, and so we'll go to our second John for the day. Good morning, John.
Hi. Hey, the last comment that, well, I heard the word we need integrity. And the first person I thought of when I heard that was Rachel Carson and Silent Spring. And along those lines, I was thinking that, we talk about the better training of journalists. I felt for a long time that I'm not so convinced about journalism school. I like the idea of people like Rachel Carson, scientists who have a conscience, who know how to write, and other people who are trained in disciplines who have a conscience and want to and care about rights and care about the truth. I think that's more of a model to strive for rather than a professionalized journalism, because the people that can really get into the nuts and bolts of science, like Rachel Carson, can tell what is actually happening. And I'll leave comments off the air.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. McGovern, you wrote an article in which you talked about ethicists using use the phrase supervening values. Are there supervening values that all of us can tap into that, whether we're journalists or consumers of information, that we can access?
Well, I think the answer is yes. I think a lot of people don't step back and reflect on this, but when you have a choice, as many, are we still on?
Yes, we are.
Okay. As many truth tellers like Colleen Rowley had this choice, to keep quiet, you know, and prosper and become not only division counsel, but maybe deputy counsel at the FBI headquarters in Washington. I mean, this is sort of the seductive thing of how you, if you comply, if you conform, man, you can get a lot of money and you can get a lot of prestige. If, on the other hand, you step back and you say, my God, our country, as Colleen did in early 2003, February, a month before the war, our country is going off on a fool's errand into Iraq where a lot of people are going to be killed, like millions. And so I'm going to write a letter to the FBI director, and to the degree he has any role in this decision-making, I'm going to at least do my part and make sure that he gets the word from me, okay? Now, she wrote to him. He disregarded it, of course. But then, somehow or other, it got to the New York Times' Phil Sheehan, and it appeared on the first page of the New York Times. Now, that's guts, okay? Now, Colleen Rowley was not going to get promoted. As a matter of fact, she got demoted, okay? But that didn't matter because she had integrity. And that's the kind of integrity we need. Let me raise one more example here. There was a woman back in the 50s. Her name was Frances Kelsey, okay? Who is she? She was working for the Food and Drug Administration, and she was given the task of approving the drug thalidomide. Okay. But most of you don't know, but thalidomide was responsible for all manner of little children, babies being born without limbs, okay? It was to be taken by pregnant women to help them sleep. Now, Frances Kelsey was under all kinds of pressure to approve this drug from these very powerful drug companies, and she said, no way will I approve this. The tests have been fixed, okay? Now, so the result of that was it was not introduced into this country except on a very small experimental basis, and there were casualties from that. But when I got to Germany for my first tour of duty, there were all kinds of teenagers at that point, without a leg, without an arm, mm-hmm. thousands and thousands of them. Now, what would have happened if Frances Kelsey had available to her something like WikiLeaks, and she had the courage of the kind that Colleen has, to go to WikiLeaks in a pretty secure way and send them a memo and say, look, these are my findings. Those tests on thalidomide were fixed, okay? And so spread this around. She could have saved tens of thousands of children born in Germany, France, and the rest of Western Europe from being born with either no limbs or one or two or three rather than four. That's big. And so that gives me great encouragement that this technology permits this kind of thing now. And I think we're going to see more people taking advantage of it. Private Manning, unfortunately, was not smart enough to keep his mouth shut because he might have escaped what's going to happen to him now. He bragged about it, and most people won't be bragging about this kind of thing. So I think we have legitimate reason to be optimistic about what may happen in the future.
Well, there's one thing, though, if we can address. We just don't have enough time, but I'll try to shoehorn it in here. Your thoughts that the ability for people to come forth and to manifest integrity online is that this is valuable. This is a valuable aspect of life. But what about the possibility of our government deciding to institute the kill switch bill, or corporate America determining to put controls either via hardware or software that can amount to a kill switch feature?
Yeah, that's a serious concern. There's been ongoing efforts to gain control over the internet, and the and net neutrality. In fact, this week we have one of the FCC commissioners, Michael Copps, coming to town to talk to our mm-hmm. audience about this problem. He's been fighting against this, the powers trying to gain control of the internet. You see the Pentagon, for instance, just extremely, furious at what the WikiLeaks has done in terms of its ability to control that public opinion and that war momentum. And you can basically see the signs on the wall that someone is going to attempt. The Liebermans, of course, I think is a proponent of the kill switch, but
yes,
there's different ways that they will try to do this because the Internet does represent a threat. The gaining of, it's funny because they use the thing winning hearts and minds of people in Afghanistan and Iraq and in the Mideast. But you know what? The Pentagon's using a form of psychological operation warfare, kind of a propagandistic psychological operation warfare to win so our hearts and minds.
Well, yes,
in the United States.
Yes, I mean they had the opportunity to redact these stories. So if there really was a major threat, they did not act, and so they can use that cry, you know, of foul against the American populace and get us not to trust anything that comes out of WikiLeaks or the Internet at large.
That's right. They've been out there speaking and basically castigating Julian Assange for not being careful enough. And, and actually, you know, I was a Freedom of Information officer for 13 years, and I think they're going through these last documents now line by line. You can't ask for more of a Freedom of Information type approach to the carefulness that's necessary. But so that's a false reason that they're giving, that they would need to somehow gain control of other countries' internets and websites and things like this. China does these things. Certainly China doesn't even allow the Huffington Post. Did you know that?
Yes.
But, you know, why are we now getting into the same business that China does to control its information?
I guess I'm going to chime in with some uneducated views here. I'm hardly a technology buff. But I want to think, and this is not the way we do analysis usually, but I want to think that these young people, Julian Assange and company, that they're bright enough to have figured out most of the ways that the Pentagon may try to shut them down, and that for the next period, they're going to be very much in business. Now, I agree, on the other hand, that the Pentagon will do everything it can, and the Pentagon, you know, has a lot of capabilities to do this, to shut them down. Worse still, the head of this new cyber security, cyber offense and defense agency, who is also the head of NSA, his name is General Keith Alexander. I'm embarrassed to say he's an Army general. Why am I embarrassed? Because I was an Army officer, and they taught us in those days that you're not supposed to lie.
You're supposed to have integrity.
Well, he lied about when his congressional overseer, Representative Rush Holt from New Jersey, when he visited Keith Alexander at NSA headquarters at Fort Meade and asked him, "You're not eavesdropping on U.S. citizens without a warrant, are you?" And Keith Alexander, "Oh, no, that's the first commandment in NSA. We never do that." Well, it was less than a week later that Rush Holt found out that they were doing that for years under his predecessor, Michael Hayden, and under Keith Alexander. So here you have somebody committing a felony, lying to a congressional overseer. And now he's not only the head of NSA, but he's head of cybersecurity. So you can depend on a man without integrity to be on the receiving end of whatever instructions he gets from the White House or the Pentagon to shut WikiLeaks down. So it's a dual-headed thing. I think they're going to survive for many more months. But when you have people of such principle, in quotes, as General Keith Alexander, you can be sure that the Pentagon will do everything in its power to shut them down.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for giving time. Any closing thoughts?
We're wondering, as we wind down our hours, as you look at what's coming out or what's not coming out in terms of the media, if you have any final thoughts on those of us who are consumers, not only to how to access accurate information, but also to advocate for changes so that information will be available for all people.
I'll just mention that WikiLeaks is on Facebook. It's on social media. People should join these sites. There are ways to support, even through donations. It's kind of hard because you have to make a donation to a foreign bank, and it's protected that way. But there are ways to support the effort. Certainly, we can all write letters in support of Private Manning, who's being held at the Quantico Marine Base. One thing is just to you know, get those critical thinking skills back in play. The truth. There's a false notion that the truth will hurt us somehow. That, you know, I know Ray McGovern just says, "I want to think." You know, he said that a couple of times, "I want to think." That's exactly right. Our country needs to think. We need real facts to think. And we have to not be, you know, falling under this notion that if we know military information, for instance, somehow that's going to hurt our security. We're scared to even know some of these things, the My Lai massacre, and, you know, let's just keep Pat Tillman's death. Let's just keep these quiet and secret, because what we don't know won't hurt us. We have this, you know, as a whole, and all of our friends and relatives are laboring under these misconceptions that somehow the Pentagon is doing things for our best interests. We have to constantly explain to people that the truth actually does make us safer. Ray McGovern has just written his story of what happened during Vietnam, where if we would have been able to get the true numbers of the Viet Cong out, that would have saved lives. It wouldn't have made us less safe. It would have actually helped save lives. And I think that's the key message here.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Colleen McGovern, and for
Colleen
Raleigh, excuse me, and Ray McGovern. Thank you so much for giving us valuable time and not only entertaining our idea that there is a higher level of integrity, but stretching our horizons when it comes to being critical consumers of media and what we're told. Thank you so much, and perhaps we'll get to visit again in the future.
You're most welcome.
You've been listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio, Monday Morning Talk and Electronic Fence Conversation Forum. We hope you'll stay tuned, because coming up is more opportunities for information and news that you can use on the Old Mo Variety Hour and more. This is your Community Connection, KBOO, Portland.